Disclaimer. This podcast is my own, and the views expressed by me and my guests on this podcast do not reflect the opinions of PSA Collectors or any other company that engages me for appraisal services. Neither myself nor my guests provide any financial or investment advice on this podcast, and any discussions of valuations for collectibles, either in the past or the present, does not guarantee future performance. Enjoy the show. Well, we have yet another great episode of the Sports Appraiser podcast coming to you today. And I'm so excited because a couple of weeks ago, when I was on the floor of the National Sports Collectors Convention, every day I check my email and I read Front Office Sports. And the fabulous writer, Ben Horney, announced that Bleeker Trading had been sold. So I immediately texted Ben. I said, oh my God. He goes, yeah, Mark's a great guy, blah, blah, blah. I love interviewing him. So I said to myself, yeah, I also should interview Mark and kind of check in and see what happened. So today we have the great Mark Zavlo of Bleeker Trading. Mark, welcome to the pod.
Michael, it's a pleasure. I've known you for a while, followed you for even longer. So it's exciting to finally speak like this.
I really appreciate it. Kind of take us back maybe 4 years or so ago. What was the impetus to start Bleeker Trading? I know you were very successful in the advertising world, and then COVID happened, and then all of a sudden Bleeker Trading opened up.
Yeah, so there's the age-old story I think everyone's probably sick of hearing right now about my work in the marketing space for the beer brand Corona, being in live events and being dealt kind of a funny and unlucky hand with the virus being named Corona and all live events being shut down. You know, the truth behind that is since about 2017, as a marketing agency, we had been looking at the collectible space. We've been looking specifically at the sports card space as something entrepreneurial we wanted to dive into. We had started going to the National, and me being a lifelong collector, you know, was able to start to realize the difference when you started to see the young kids like slab stocks in the back of the National and people talking data that you didn't normally see in the traditional show. So that sparked some interest for us. We tried to find some ways to break into the hobby. There were not a lot of opportunity, not a lot of innovation yet in 2017, 2018, 2019. And so when the pandemic hit, it kind of was just a perfect mix of, you know, the stars aligning and what we like to say, capturing lightning in a bottle of, you know, we had an agency that was looking for something to do. You know, we really understood lifestyle marketing and experience. You know, you match that up to a couple things going on in the hobby. One, the hobby had no lifestyle brand or aspect to it whatsoever. The hobby experience, especially whether it was at events or trading card stores, was very antiquated. And most importantly, New York did not have a actual, venue or a trading card shop, or New York didn't have a trading card show, anything to really be a badge for New York. And it wasn't just about New York City or New York State, but it was about New York really being a global destination. And you think about the Yankees, and you think about Mantle, and you think about like how much around sports cards are tied to New York. To not have that destination, you know, we looked at as, you know, the third problem to solve. You then line that up with New York City real estate being the cheapest it's ever been. And again, a lot of the right things start snowballing into place. And so led to the agency deciding to take a space as a pop-up. Let's create a brand. Let's create some merch. Let's figure out some events. And kind of was, let's do everything but trading cards. Because as you know, from back then, you know, how do you open up a retail store with distribution and, you know, kind of the network there. So our thought was, let's create the brand and the experience, and the rest will follow.
And then you open up in the West Village on the corner of Bleeker Street and Christopher Street. Walk us through your first week. Did you have any customers? Who was your first customer? What were you selling? What was the feedback like?
So, good question. We had no customers our first week because there were no customers. There were no people on the street. We opened up on a Wednesday night, really with the mindset of let's start telling people this place exists. And we were lucky that there were some NFL players and other athletes that were still wanting to go out, and there weren't really sports on, but UFC was having fights. So, you know, opening the lounge up as, hey, come watch a UFC fight here. And how weird is it? We have trading cards. That was kind of our first move or two. We got very lucky, though, that week. Nat Turner, of all people, happens to live nearby the store, at least when he's in New York. And he had put up a Twitter post or an Instagram post asking if there's any card shops in New York City. And it was like, boom, marketing thesis hit. And we wrote him a couple friends. I think we hit every person we know to be like, yo, respond to this. Say Bleeker Trading. Nat DM'd us, came by the next day. We built Bleeker with a lot of our personal collection. We didn't have distribution or anything like that. And just very lucky that a lot of what we collected was from the era of wax that Nat likes. A lot of the 2003, a lot of the 96, and kind of everything in between. And Nat was cool. He came by with a friend. They made a big purchase. We hooked him up with some gear. He put it up on Instagram that night. And, you know, to us, we literally felt like we went from 0 to 100, on day two, day three. So that was kind of our first customer. And that obviously spawned, you know, a great relationship with Nat and then the company with PSA that he bought, and snowballed to a lot of fun things.
Now, you mentioned Nat buying some items at the store. In general, what are the price points that you sell? I know you sell singles and wax, but I'm just trying to think, let's say I'm someone that's visiting New York City, what can I expect to find?
Well, you know, it's funny. When we opened then with Nat, we were selling in very high price wax. And that's truly all we had, Michael. We didn't have relationships with any suppliers or distributors. You know, fast forward 4 years later, and it's actually the total opposite. We have really what we call your collector price points, everything from the low end to the mid to the high end. What you don't see at Bleeker often are your, you know, very high end, high range, one of a kind cards and wax. It's not really who our collector is. And it's not something in New York City, especially, you want to be keeping in your stores. Especially when we opened in 2020, 2021, where we are on Christopher Street is a big social gathering. So protests or just marches, a lot of social eruptions. It's never a place you want to have $10, $20, $50,000 cards and items. And quite frankly, that's not, you know, who our daily customer is. Not to say we don't get those items from time to time. And we've sold boxes that are worth way more than that, or individual cards more than that. But right now, you know, we really focus on what the customer's collecting every day. And I think what's unique about Bleeker is it gets so many different customers by being a local card shop, a destination card shop, and a tourism hub. And so when you think of that, you know, you have people that are collecting everything from your modern collectors to your vintage collectors to your TCG collectors to people that are rediscovering the hobby but still want to rip open those 90s packs to, you know, the people that are just entering and they need to learn more about products through blaster boxes or through the singles. But, you know, Bleeker really does a great job of owning kind of that community experience. There's other card shops that I think really deliver on the discovery. And, you know, we focus a little bit more on the event experience, on the customer experience. I'd also call what Bleeker does different is the non-customer experience as well, as we drive a lot of people in from the neighborhood, from the community, or friends of friends or family members and aspects like that.
The event experience is something that I can personally attest to. I've probably been to 6 or 7 different events over the years. Some of them have been trade nights. Most recently last year on a Friday, it was a PSA drop-off event, which was held outside. And the line, it must have been maybe 2 p.m. or 3 p.m. And the PSA customer service professionals were outside in the back, but the line came all the way through the store out into the front. And I'm thinking, like, don't these people work? Like, what are we doing here? It was incredible to see. And so for me, because I don't buy, sell, or trade, those experiential events that are always held at Bleeker are always something that's fun to see.
We hold that, you know, I think, near and dear to our heart. We definitely didn't invent an event at a card shop or invent the trade night, but we definitely pulsed it. I think we definitely stepped it up, and I think we pushed everyone else in the hobby to step those elements up. We expanded into the space next door, specifically for those experiences like PSA. And so we can continue to bring a lot of what's in the hobby to Bleeker, whether that's from an event or from a service experience like that we do with them. But, you know, ultimately, we pride ourselves on making the experience what people remember about Bleeker. You could buy cards anywhere. You could buy them cheaper anywhere, too, with everything going on online. So we really want to not just make sure the customer finds it, you know, worthwhile when they're there, but worthwhile to come all the way down to us, you know, in the middle of the West Village. Not everybody lives in New York City.
And I know about 5 or 6 months ago, you opened up a second location in New York City. And then, of course, the news, like I said, a week or two ago that you had sold. Kind of walk us through the reason for opening up the second location and then the reason why you sold. And then tell us about Matt, who I believe is your head of operations, who is now the new owner.
Yeah, so, you know, I think rewind that a little bit. I had met Matt as a customer coming into the store, a little too curious of a customer, may I add. But a customer coming into the store, his sibling had recommended it. His sibling's a big collector. And as I started to get to know Matt, I realized, you know, this was someone looking more to get into the business than to just collect. And so over the last year or so, he had joined on, literally kind of like what I say is like one of those people that just didn't leave. You know, he's like, hey, I want to help out. I want to work here. And I'd look up and he'd be hanging out in my office and I'd leave my office and he'd be hanging out at the retail store. But he's one of those people where you look up and he's working the front of the retail store. He's checking customers out. Or he jumps into my office and he sees I'm on a finance call and he just sits down and listens in. And so he started to really become the confidant person I kind of counted on and trusted, went to for advice on a lot of things. At that point, you know, we had just gotten out of the LA situation not working. And when we decided to do LA, we neglected or we moved away from opening up our second New York store. So when LA didn't work out, we went hard into finding what that opportunity was. And, you know, kind of when Matt and I were looking at the data, I think the biggest thing that our team saw was just the density of New York City. You have 20,000 people in the West Village where our Christopher Street store is. We were excited about Santa Monica because I think there was 100,000 people in the zip code we were looking at that live there. Well, what we found in the Upper West Side in our second store, you know, we're 30-story buildings versus 6-story buildings in the West Village and 200,000 people in a walkable zip code to that. And so you kind of looked at what was happening around New York. You know, our goal in the beginning was really to make New York a collectibles hub. That kind of happened. You have a lot there now. At the same time, you know, we look at certain communities and we saw a big parallel in our customer, a lot of them coming down from the Upper West Side. For us, we can start to get some more cost efficiencies by sharing employees as the stores were close enough to each other. And even being able to be, you know, one straight avenue up or one straight subway up, you know, we started to see, hey, we could spread out our marketing costs, hire some more senior people corporately. Now you can have one person on social managing both elements. And so those efficiencies made a lot of sense. And, you know, having Mike Kalpak as such a strong general manager downtown, where, you know, Mike could pretty much run the company if he needed to. When you added Matt in, it was like, okay, you know, now, you know, we have some more grownups in the equation. Ryan Breslin, our manager that we brought on up there. It just, it all started to feel right. And at the same time, it felt on brand. I think, you know, we had a lot of opportunities to move into spaces, whether they were malls or whether they were stadiums or whether they were other big buildings that were opening. And it's just not who our brand was at the time. Not to say that Matt and the team won't transition it into something a little bit more prestige. But at the time, I think, you know, we are who we are. We're very neighborhood. You know, we know our bodega. We know our window washer. We work with the pizza place next door. You know, part of that is running a small business in New York. When we did the Verizon commercial with Sauce Gardner, I mean, that was the big thing when he was walking down the block with us. He's like, you guys all know each other. And it was, yeah, I mean, you know, we know, you know, how to survive in this, you know, in this environment. Not many trading card stores have to pay a gardener and the rodent people and the garbage fees that we do being in New York City. So you need your neighbors, you need your neighborhood. And I think when we saw the Upper West Side, what that could kind of do for our brand in New York, the differentiation it brings between whether it's Dave and Hannum's in Midtown or Cardwell coming to Soho, you know, it felt there's just a natural extension of the brand. And again, having such strong senior people next to me, you know, it was an absolute no-brainer that, you know, we can scale and keep our team intact by them working in both stores.
Now, what is your role going to be moving forward at Bleecker? Are you now executive chairman, or how is that going to work, and how long do you stay on?
So you got to remember one thing, Mike. Bleecker was always a part-time job. You know, my agency, Cogent World, started in 2011, 40 plus people. Most of them moved to LA, got sick of me talking about Bleecker in New York all day. And thankfully, you know, my partner, Malcolm, and the team out there, they do a great job kind of keeping the vibe and the culture where it needs to be. But, you know, that's where I made my living. Every dollar, every card I have was poured into Bleecker. So, you know, there always was for me kind of the path of, hey, which one can I take more seriously? You know, when Matt stepped in, I saw the path where I can kind of do both. However, commit myself 100% into Cogent. And Cogent is really always is, you know, we're always working on what's next. And so I think you had a couple quick equations. One was, you know, right time in the hobby, right time. If you're going to explode a brand, now is when you want to do it. You know, Matt brings the hunger, the integrity, and the resources to step in and really do that. In order for him to step in and do that, you know, he really needs to run that. You know, my involvement creatively, you know, hobby connections, you know, a lot of what I do, that's the fun stuff, you know, helping with merch and coming up with other events and how we're going to show up at different experiences. Like, that's what I love to do. Worrying about inventory, operations, hiring, for all the business side of things, the widget side of the business, like, I hate that more than anything. And, you know, you're balancing credit cards, you're balancing debts, like, there's nothing fun about that. So, you know, Matt really is a gift from God in the sense that, like, he's allowing me to go focus. If there's 10 things you got to do to run the business, he's allowing me to focus on the one thing I love doing and I think I'm great at and I think actually helps the hobby. Everything else I was doing at Bleecker doesn't help the hobby. It maintains what Bleecker was doing. Matt will exceed that. Matt will expand that. You know, for me, I get to focus on what I love doing at Cogent, which is pretty much, you know, doing this again. You know, will it be a card shop like this? Absolutely not. But at the same time, I don't know what my contribution could have been to the hobby the next couple of years if I continue to run Bleecker. And I always said, you know, once you don't need what I do, I don't want to be there. I want to be on the other side with you, eating the pizza, getting my cards graded, having fun, letting someone else worry about it. And, you know, I think Matt's in a great position to maintain that and grow that. And it puts me in a strong position to really go into what's next for that.
Where do you see Bleecker 5 years from now?
Oh, you know, I'm probably the wrong person to ask, Mike. You know, I could see a very dominant path on expansion if Matt chooses to. I also see a very smart path of, you know, not having to do a thing. I think what's unique about Bleecker, look at the spaces that Bleecker doesn't play in right now. You don't see Bleecker in breaking and live shopping. E-commerce is pretty limited to local pickup. And maybe some Uber delivery. You know, the event experience, the CRM experience. I don't know, Mike. I think if you dial that up alone, you almost double the revenue. You know, breaking and live breaks and mystery packs and all that. I mean, that's bigger than retail. So I don't know where they are in 5 years. I think with the way that this hobby's going, they have phenomenal relationships with their landlords, you know, and the areas of New York that we're in are bustling. So there's every reason for the brand to probably be a lot hotter then than it will be now. And I still think from the hobby side of things, you know, if we're going to call it the innings, what inning are we in? You know, I think if you look at it from a fanatic standpoint, they have another decade, right? 5+ years of the NFL license coming on right now. So you know, I look at Bleeker as, hey, like, you know, in the most careful of ways is, you know, Fanatics is giving them Marlboro cigarettes. You know, the brand is dope. It's being marketed well, and it's an addictive product. So to that extent, I think it'll still be in the mid innings of where this hobby is going. And they have, you know, some amazing paths if they want to go. But I will say this, from the team they have locally, there's so much room to dominate with growth in New York City. And I would bet on them. What I've told a few people is I wouldn't have recommended competing heavily with Bleeker before I sold it. But now with, you know, Matt and the team's focus and the resources coming in, they could do a lot. So I'm excited to be a part of that and really contribute minimally to that potential.
Well, also excited to watch Bleeker years from now and see what happens and see the growth. Mark, congrats on the sale. Congrats on your success. And thanks again for being on the pod today.
Mike, it's a pleasure is mine. I thank you for having me. And again, I hope we get to catch up in person soon.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.